WDBL. This is Page 2. I'm Jay Swofford, along with Neil Peterson, and Terry Price is our Thursday morning co-host with us, and Terry's going to be with us in just a few minutes, talking about creative writing and maybe a few workshops that you might be able to attend. Right now joining us is Steve Baum. Steve is, I believe, in Franklin, Tennessee, and Steve is a organ transplant recipient. First of all, Steve, good morning.
Well, good morning, Jay. How are you?
Doing well. And like I was telling our co-hosts, Neil and Terry here, that I met you a few years back while we were participating in the Tennessee Senior Olympics, which means you're over 50, right?
Considerably. I just turned 50 in June. So, Yeah, no, I remember that. I remember we met, you started off trash talking, as I recall.
How did he finish? How you start doesn't matter.
Listen, Steve, you were living in Franklin, I believe you said.
Yes, sure do. We've been here since 86, all except for 3 years in Branson, Tennessee.
And you're from Colorado originally?
Originally, in Jefferson County, Colorado.
Uh-huh. And I heard they had a lot of snow there overnight, so a lot of snow skiing going on over there.
My grandkids are loving it, you bet.
Oh, yeah. I see some of your pictures on Facebook with your grandkids, great-looking kids. Listen, I met you at the Senior Olympics, and I remember you had a T-shirt talking about transplant, and you were a transplant recipient, I believe two. Organ transplants?
No, that's correct. Not only a kidney, which is the most common organ that when it fails needs transplantation, but also a liver. Had a genetic disease that runs in our family. Probably about half of our family have it. That's the way that those chips fall, called polycystic kidney disease and polycystic liver disease. Mm-hmm. And what that is a predisposition for cysts to grow on the outside of the organs. Mm-hmm. They choke off the function in kidneys fairly rapidly once they show up, usually when you're in your early 50s for most of us. The liver is less the case of function and more a case of how big the liver can get and how it then affects all the organs around it, which was my case. Both of my organs were also what they call massively enlarged.
Mm-hmm. All right. Listen. Now, I want to help out your situation, and let me ask what organization I know you help out. This organization that involves organ transplants. What organization? What's the name of the organization?
The corporate name is DCI Services. They're a company based here in Nashville. Mm-hmm. Who provides both dialysis services, and then they are also the local clearinghouse for the federal government in terms of organ allocation as they become available and that type of thing. The easiest search for one of your listeners would be to maybe Google Donate Life Tennessee or Donate Life TN, mm-hmm. and that will take you to their webpage.
Okay, now, I have a valid Tennessee driver's license, and I hope you do too.
Mm-hmm.
On the back, for many years now in Tennessee, we've been able to qualify as an organ donor, and by signing it and by checking the correct box and putting all of the pertinent information on there and then going online and making sure that you know what you're signing and that type of thing. If I want to be involved, do I do that first, or am I just signing up online somewhere with that organization that you're talking about?
No, by all means, sign the back of your driver's license, and you should these days be able to, when you renew, to declare you want to be an organ donor. And what they'll do then is on your new picture, there'll be a little red heart on the front of the card, mm-hmm. which is a little bit more noticeable because that signature can rub off on the back.
Yeah, wow.
Here in Tennessee, though, you have to do that every time you renew.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's better to really go online and register because that will kind of supersede the whole driver's license process. But the folks in the driver's license offices have been wonderful for our cause. They've just been great here in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. I just noticed my little heart right next to my picture of the bald-headed guy with the glasses on.
You thought they just liked your photo.
I just thought I was one of their favorite photos. I didn't know what the heart meant. So you're a great spokesperson. I see you putting out some emails and on Facebook talking about organ transplantation. How long were you, did this disease manifest itself before you realized? I mean, did you know this all along, that something was wrong, or how long?
You know, we knew that we were predisposed to it, and my dad was the first one who was diagnosed with it, and that's because really it wasn't identified until the 70s. People would get diabetes, they'd have kidney failure, they might have other things that happened, but no one had really identified this. And so what we do, if we know we're in a family that does that, is about 8:30, you go in and have an ultrasound done. If you have it, then you will have cysts showing up about the size of nickels, dimes, and quarters. Mm. And that kind of tells you, well, here we go. And from that point, it's 20 or 25 years of really relatively pain-free development until all of a sudden blood pressure really spikes and you start noticing differences in urine flow and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem with it. Much like high blood pressure, it tends to be kind of a silent killer, and a lot of people carry it and don't know and then have problems later in life, not really know what's happening to them. Mm-hmm.
Can older folks be donors?
Well, yes. Now, specifically for kidneys, there's a point in some cases, and it's all individual. You know, there are people who are 90 years old that have donated certain things that they can donate. But we tell people, listen, you know, if you want to do that, if it's part of you that you want to make, you know, that particular contribution after you pass away, let the doctors decide that, because it's not only organ donation, it's also tissue donation. And so, you know, one person can save 7, sometimes 8 lives. But in addition to that, there are parts of you that, let's take skin off your back, mm-hmm. could conceivably go to help a child burn victim, mm-hmm. as an example.
Let me ask another question. Even though you've checked all the boxes and signed all the lines, isn't it true that your family has to be on board for donation at the time of your passing?
It's best to let them know. In many hospitals, you know, family, and of course it's the most emotional time in their lives.
Right.
And so families, I have heard of them saying, you know, well, no, and the like. And the medical professionals will always go with what the family says. But I'll tell you what's more common is someone not signing up to be an organ donor and not saying they didn't want to be. And then family members, you know, if it's something that is sudden and it's something that's unexpected, you know, there are a lot of family members that will say, you know, in some way I would like my loved one to live on. And they were a very giving person. They didn't sign up for this, but we think they would have. Mm-hmm. And so a family member can make that decision going in the other direction.
I see.
I'm the recipient of bone and tissue transplant, and very grateful for that. And I've practiced law for a number of years. And one of the things when I work with clients in terms of advance directives and living wills and such is that's always a question I would ask. And I was always surprised how many people had not contemplated that. Mm-hmm. And once they thought about it, the vast majority would say, well, yes, I'd like to do that. And so it's very easy to put those things in your estate planning documents. But as I was telling Jay and Neil before we got on, and you all touched on it here just a moment ago, you really need to raise that flag and make sure everyone knows that that's your wishes, those are your intentions, because when someone passes away, you're going through the process of grief. You're going through the process of planning a funeral and notifying, and sometimes these things can get lost in the wake. So if you really make sure everyone's on board, everyone knows, put it in all your documents, then it makes it easier. That's something you don't really have to deal with, because it's already established.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so, very much so. You know, within our culture, and it's kind of the subculture, people who have received, people who are waiting, people who are in donor families, living donors, really the people who are the most honored when we get together for things like the Transplant Games of America and the like is and are the donor families. And I will tell you that, you know, there's a march in process for the opening of the games and that type of thing. And the loudest cheers and the most tears are always when the donor families come in. And you know, another part of our culture is that most people who donate or they have a loved one donate will make the recipient known, you know, who that person was. And sometimes they will have moments where they get together and meet each other in life. Now, some don't. My particular donor and both the kidney and liver came from the same donor, sudden accident on a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. You contact those people anonymously through the Oregon clearinghouse, if you will. And my wife has sent a letter, and I've sent a letter, and my donor's family obviously don't want to be contacted. I mean, they made that decision. They may still be grieving even 6 years later, and you have to respect that. So certainly their wishes are far more important than my or anybody else's curiosity.
Steve, give us some stats. How many people do you know, how many people in our area or maybe nationwide are awaiting a transplant of some type?
Nationwide right now, it's 123,000 people.
Wow.
75 to 80% are those waiting for kidneys. You know, when you sign up to be an organ donor, there is less than a 3% chance that the circumstances of your passing and the timing of it and the like would make you and what you are a good donor at that particular time. And so having more people signed up, you know, Tennessee being the volunteer state, there are more people percentage-wise signed up to be organ donors in Tennessee than there are in any of the states in the Northeast, as an example. In fact, there's legislation going on. The New York State would like to have some of our livers. You can imagine how that goes over.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how long, once you're on this list or waiting list, how long is the wait before, statistically, before you get a transplant?
For a kidney patient, it's about 4 years for what is called a cadaver kidney transplant. Mm-hmm. I know many living donors who have given a kidney to a loved one, and even some who have donated a kidney anonymously. You know, kidneys are redundant. So you wonder sometimes if when we were designed, if there wasn't a plan for failure. It's really one of our most fragile organs.
Mm-hmm.
Living donors. That's also a rising trend, but you know, not quite fast enough for people who are slowly dying and on dialysis.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about that. Do you know how many the stats on how many people in Middle Tennessee or in Tennessee that are awaiting right now a liver or a organ donation?
I don't, but I imagine it's around 2 to 2.5% of that 123,000 number, just because that's where we fall in terms of population percentage in the United States. Those things are pretty. The percentages per state are pretty close to being the same thing. You know, it's not something in your water. It's not something in the air. It's something in your body.
Right.
Now that you've had your transplants and you've gotten beyond a certain period of time, are there any restrictions on what you can do, what you can't do?
I know he can beat people on a bicycle.
Well, I can. They encourage the more exercise, the better. They don't like it in contact sports. But if basketball at the Senior Olympics is a contact sport, so we have to be careful with that. No, you can eat more than you could before. They put you on low fluids and low potassium and things like that ahead of time, where the first two foods I had when I got out of the hospital were a banana and an avocado, because I had really missed them.
Wow.
What we do have to watch for is we can be predisposed for diabetes later, and so when they check our blood periodically, some people are still once every 3 months, even this far out. I'm lucky I'm only once a year. They will check for all those things, and we watch sweets and the like. We watch starches. We kind of try to do a pre-diabetic type of a diet. But really, we can eat more, and we're encouraged to exercise, and we're encouraged to get out there. You know, it's different within everybody's different psych. Some people just stay in the home and they're so happy to be alive they don't want to risk anything, and then some people ride bicycles downhill at breakneck speed.
Yeah, I've seen you do that. You said you're from Colorado and you're here in Tennessee now. Somebody else that's from Colorado and here in Tennessee now is Jeff Bosnes. How about that, huh? You play basketball with him?
Well, our school played basketball against them as well as football. Jeff is at least a two-sport athlete. And, in fact, I guess he had some news recently that I shared with my friends back in Colorado. And three of the guys on our team all, you know, said, well, we're glad he's doing well. Oh, it was him being inducted into the Vanderbilt Sports Hall of Fame.
Right.
And, you know, he's the type of guy, his competitors all fought the world of him. He was a good sportsman. He was a good competitor. He's very good at what he did. Now, he had a couple of teammates that we hate to this day, but he's a good guy.
and I know you tried to encourage him to get into the Tennessee Senior Olympics. Of course, I think you want him on your team.
You know, Margo was on just ahead of me, and I believe that Margo may be blocking that a little bit. I think you've got to trick me that...
I think we all have trick knees now, don't we? You know, once you reach that certain age, I think they're all trick knees.
There you go.
Listen, Howard, one last question here. You are a double transplant recipient. How are you feeling these days? Are you having an average life or a regular life, as we would say?
Well, I would say better than average, just because I know where I've come from. And, you know, my doctors told me I didn't know how sick I was until I was well, and then I would realize how sick I was. And
well.
And that's very true. So, no, for me, 95% of the days are great. 5%, something funny will happen that's connected to it. But I'm in a far, far better place, and my family is, too, than we were before.
Steve, it's a pleasure knowing you, and we appreciate you getting the word out and all of the work that you do for organ transplantation.
Well, thanks, fellas. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you. Steve Baum with a double organ transplantation recipient, and he was with us from his home in Franklin, Tennessee. Very nice guy. I met him at the Tennessee Senior Olympics a few years ago, and a great guy, and I'll be competing against him next year as well. So we'll be seeing him very, very soon. We'll be right back with Terry Price, our Thursday morning co-host, and he's going to talk about some creative writing.
The Downtown Merchants Association's third Thursday art walk.
Now is the time to try.